You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
We've talked about like different TV series on this show before and what we're into, what we're not into, what we like, something that's been, you know, maybe we've latched onto a little bit. Are you currently into one at all, Josh? Do you have one that you're watching right now or anything like that?
I don't think so. I tried that Paradise show on Hulu. It's about like a Secret Service agent with like the president and stuff. It was okay. I don't know. I only got a couple episodes in and I kind of got bored of it. So I'm trying to think though. I usually just like, if I'm bored, I rewatch like Friends or something because I got into that last summer.
Yeah.
I watched it for the first time ever last summer. It's like my girlfriend's favorite show. And she was like, okay, we're watching it. So we just like binged it throughout like 3 months. And I love it. It's a great show. So I'll just throw on like a random episode every once in a while and just watch from there and see where I get to. But there hasn't been very many good TV shows lately. Like, I don't know if that's a hot take.
Good for
or not,
you, by the way, on Friends. Isn't that older than you? Like, that was before you.
It ended after I was alive, but it started, I think, in 1996, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure, but I know it ended after
good
I was
for you.
Born. Yeah, it's a great show. I think it's '94 that it, wow.
Because it was popular for a while when I was in college and definitely when I moved to Florida in the late 90s. And then I think, you know, The Office is one of those shows that's always on, right? We're big Office fans.
I recently watched that too, but I only got to like Jim and Pam's wedding and then I was like, okay.
Ooh.
Like I got to that.
In Niagara Falls, yes.
Yeah, and I did all that. I got through all that and then I think we were on like season 7. That's another one of my girlfriend's favorite shows. And like she was like, after this, you can just stop. It kind of falls off right now. And I'm like, oh, okay, all right. Because I was kind of checked out of it anyway. So it wasn't...
What's your girlfriend's name?
Grace.
I think what I take away from this conversation is Grace totally controls your TV viewing habits.
Okay, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Right? Come on
now. Because she has been watching, like... she was watching Desperate Housewives, of all things, one time. And like, because she had never seen it. And I ended up watching like parts of the series with her. And I was like, wow, this is actually like not that bad of a show. The story... The acting's not great, but the story's pretty good. But yeah, no, she definitely controls most of the TV remote. Unless it's sports, then it's, you know, all me. But when it's TV shows or movies, she's the queen there with the remote.
I bring this up for a reason, which got us off somewhere else, which is fine. Totally cool. I'm glad that you brought that up. That was very interesting to learn about that. I really like, there's a joke in my house that like, my wife will go, oh, you're going to stay up late to watch another crime drama? I'm like, yeah, right? Like, Dateline and 48 Hours. I like that kind of stuff, right? I really do. I really like, there's a couple different things in ways that I like to frame how I will consume these shows. I don't love these marathon shows. I've done them. I don't love them. Meaning like, oh my God, lots of seasons, lots of episodes. Give me four or five episodes, less than an hour each. Bam, it is great for me. Like, I can finish this. I know that if I start it now, I'm done in a week. Right. And I can move on to the next one. I like that because I just don't have time in my life to consume and like think about it and keep going and going and going. So I like that. I also really like kind of like documentaries or docudramas, I guess, or just revisiting things. So we recently watched the OJ one. Right. There's been a few OJs. This one was American Manhunt. Unbelievable, by the way. I think we talked about this a little bit. It was unbelievable. Watch that. So the newest one, we just finished it. And because of this series, I'm going to call it that, I've now invested every day on top of it, which is the trial of Karen Reed. Do you know about this, the trial of Karen Reed?
I actually just saw someone posting about that on Twitter this morning, but I haven't heard of it, so I don't really know what it is.
Okay, what it is it's on Max. It's on Max. And this woman, who's in her 40s, she is being accused of killing her friend, her boyfriend, who was a Boston police officer. And the manner of her being charged with murder is that she hit him with her car in a blizzard when they were having a fight and she was drunk late at night when they went over to a friend's house. Okay. And she's being accused of this. Her defense is she did not do this. He was he went inside the house when she dropped him off that night, and she didn't hit him, but he actually went inside the house, and there was a some sort of fight or something in the house, and the people put the body and put it on the lawn, and they covered it up because they're all a bunch of cops and federal agents. It's fascinating. And she actually had her trial last year. And I don't know if this is a spoiler or not. I guess I have to say it because it's been a year. And if you're watching anything about it, you would know there's another trial going on right now. And the reason is because there was a hung jury. And we go through the episodes. There are five episodes. They're about an hour each. What's fascinating about this particular show is it literally documents and goes through and films them as they're going in, as they're during the trial. This isn't just a courtroom camera, Josh. This is they have cameras in the car ride on the way to the courtroom. They have cameras when they're going through all their evidence, how they're going to present their case. It's unbelievable, like in real time. So you don't know, like when she's being interviewed, she's like, yeah, I don't know what tomorrow's going to hold, but we're gonna interview this person and put this person on the stand. You know what I mean? You never see stuff like that.
Yeah, that's like almost, that's basically like a live show, like a live hearing. That's really interesting, actually. I like that sort of stuff, too. Like you talk about like the documentaries with the crime documentaries and stuff like that. Like those are always nice because they have a beginning and an end. It's not like a show where it's like, oh, are they going to renew it for another season or not? Like, well, I don't know. But that, to me, that's like a almost revolutionary, if you want to call it, because that's never really been done before, I don't think.
Right. And she became kind of a... She became kind of a media star because of this. And like you see outside the courthouse, there's hundreds of people supporting her every day out there with signs. It's almost like a picket line. And it's just almost like a protest that you see. And then you see down the street the same thing happening for justice for the police officer and people coming out to support him and their side. It's fascinating. Anyway, the reason I even bring it up is because now, because it was a hung jury, they had to the state said, okay, we're going to retry it. Now, whenever there's a hung jury, meaning you don't have unanimous on either side, you can't get a conviction or an acquittal, it's up to the prosecution to say, do you want to try it again? You could say, we're not going to do it. We spent too many resources. We'll just kind of let it go away. They're not going to do this. This is a Boston cop who was murdered, who was killed in some capacity, however you want to talk about that. And the state, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, is saying, we're trying her again. Her trial just started last week again. Like the second trial just started. So every day, if you want, you can go watch it. And I've been doing this like at night. I'm watching court TV. Oh, I got to see what happened to the Karen Reed trial. Got to see what happened to the Karen Reed trial. It's not even like one of these TV shows anymore where you're going on Netflix or Max or Amazon. Now it's actually literally watching the trial as like we watched OJ back in the 1990s. It's crazy. And I don't know if you've been watching this or not. If you've been dialed in, I would highly recommend it. It's called The Trial of Karen Reed. I mean, just Google her name, R-E-A-D, by the way, like you're reading a book. And you'll see what I'm talking about. And some of the evidence against her is pretty damning. And some of the evidence that shows that she didn't do it is pretty damning. That's what makes it pretty incredible. And you can formulate your own opinion. But anyway, I've been doing that. And like at night and then in the morning, I'll catch up. Oh, what are they saying about the Karen Reed trial? Right. And we don't have a lot of those. They've happened over the years where, you know, you have these live kind of TV trials and people are very dialed in all the time. What's happening every single day? You know, Lacey Peterson was one of them. I watched a documentary around that. Obviously, OJ is kind of the most famous one, maybe ever. Of course, you know, over the last 30 years, I would say for sure. There's been a lot of them. And this one is pretty captivating. So anyway, just wanted to throw that out there in case anybody's ever not seen it. You want to see it? You want to watch something like that, which is really, really cool. All right. So anyway, this is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you here on WGR. Good to talk with you today. And we're going to talk a little more today with a couple of beat reporters and writers who have covered some of the Bills draft picks. We're going to get with Chad Bishop at 10:30. Chad, he is a beat reporter for Georgia Tech football for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And he's going to talk about Jackson Hawes. I also want to ask him about this whole thing with the ACC. I brought up yesterday at the end of the show, like the ACC wants to move to a, you know, fewer conference game model in basketball to get more teams in the tournament. And I don't quite understand why they're doing this. It just makes no sense. I don't think it's going to achieve the objective they want it to achieve. So we'll ask him about that. And then Andy Bitter, also ACC. I'll ask him about it too. I just realized, yeah, I got two guys from the ACC. Virginia Tech. We got Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech. And of course, the Bills took Dorian Strong from Virginia Tech as a cornerback in the draft as well. So we got that. That's at 11. So 10:30, going to talk about Jackson Hawes. 11 o'clock, going to talk about Dorian Strong. Going to get both their thoughts on, you know, what's happening at the college level as well, but mainly their thoughts on the on a couple of the newest Bills draft picks. Thank you very much, by the way. I got people now in my mentions on Twitter. I appreciate it. At Sal Sports, getting connected with our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Kyle says, you need to watch the documentary about the Murdaugh family. I have watched it. It is amazing. Yes, I have actually. That's up my alley, Kyle. I love it, buddy. You're right. Oh, my gosh. Most insane case I've seen. I know. It's pretty insane. The Righteous Gemstones on Max. Okay. Okay, Josh, I got you. I'll have to look that one up. I know people have said The Pit is really good, and we got to get into that. My wife and I are going to get into that because we've been told. But I like these document these crime docs. I like ones that are in and out, 45 minutes, an episode, and there's not too many of them to be overwhelmed by and feel guilty if you miss a few episodes and you get far behind, something like that. So that's why I like these kind of mini-series almost, if you will. That's what I like there. If you want to give me a call, you can at 803-0550. I encourage you to, because I have a question for you that I wanted to throw out there today. All right. We have spent a lot of time here, and rightfully so, talking about the Bills draft class. And we all know what happened on Monday and Brandon Bean, and then how it's carried us through a couple of days here to kind of keep talking about that and the draft class, what they did, what they didn't do. Plus, today we're talking about the Bills draft class, of course, right? I mean, these are new players coming into Buffalo. And as I've always said, I'd rather focus on the players that are coming and what they can do, not as much, well, what haven't they done? Because we don't know yet. Let's see what they could do, because these players might fill that gap of what they haven't done or what you think they still need. That said, in this regime of the Buffalo Bills, Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, over the last 8 years, going on 9 years now, in this regime, there's been a constant theme of guys who develop over 2 or 3 years that then become really good, reliable, consistent players for you who get playing time. It doesn't always work out. There's no doubt. Some guys don't develop. Some guys never really amount to much. But I think over the years, if you've looked at what the Bills have done in the draft, typically year three is a big year for a lot of guys. That would be like Dalton Kincaid this year. That would be Osiris Torrance, who's already been playing a lot. That'd be Dorian Williams. Guys in year three, throughout Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott's tenure, have really kind of taken a step in year three. Terrell Bernard, James Cook, Khalil Shakir last year, right? That was their third year last year. You want to go beyond that? How about the year before that? Greg Rousseau in his third year. Spencer Brown totally fits this, right? What he did. Dawson Knox in his third year. So guys like that. Okay. Gabe Davis, actually, you know, I saw a lot of people debating if the Bills should think about bringing back Gabe Davis and how much a lot of you just don't like him. I'd be okay with Gabe Davis coming back, not on a huge contract, but why not? Anyway, that being said, we could disagree about that. This isn't about him. What it is about is the Bills' 2024 rookie class. I say rookie class. It's not just draft class. Here's the question. I threw it out on social media, on Twitter, at Sal Sports. I'd like you to chime in on this if you could. All right. What second-year Bills players, second year, not third, but what second year? Because I think that is also when you see some jumps. Even James Cook made a nice jump his second year. Terrell Bernard obviously did start his second year. What second-year Bills player other than Keon Coleman? I think that's the easy answer. Don't cop out with Keon Coleman. What second-year player has to make a jump for the Bills this year? And maybe I could even rephrase it of which one do you expect to make a jump? But I look at the second-year class and say, there's some guys on here that they need to step up. If they want to do what they're doing, if they want to be the team that they are constructing, a lot of it is pivotal on a few of these second-year players. For example, to me, Cole Bishop is number one on my list here. And what I mean by step up, that doesn't mean they had a bad year last year. But you need to see, okay, you're in your second year now. We need this guy to go out there and show that he can handle what we're giving him. And I think that's Cole Bishop, first and foremost. But I think Dwayne Carter is in this boat. Let me give you the names here, okay, of the guys that are going into their second year on the Buffalo Bills who you could pick for this, okay? I said, don't give me Keon Coleman. I think that's just low-hanging fruit. We all know that. The Bills have said that. Last year's draft class, Cole Bishop, got some playing time, played in some critical moments, got beat pretty badly in that Houston game. I think this is a great, this is a point I like to make all the time about the safety position. This is why it's not easy just to bring guys in and put them in and go, oh, he's a better safety. That was a communication issue. That's a system issue. You know, that's something you have to learn. He got better as the year went on. He made a couple of plays on special teams. He's going to be counted on to start. I think that's number one. Number two might be Dwayne Carter. Dwayne Carter last year, after the wrist injury, was not the same player. Kind of similarly to how Keon Coleman wasn't the same player after his injury. And he was starting to elevate. He was starting to really get some time. He was starting to really be a part of the rotation. Then he has the injury. And when he comes back, my belief is that the injury kind of stymied him like that, which is you don't have as much power in your wrist. You can't really play that position as well. That's Dwayne Carter. I don't think Ray Davis has to really be the guy here. I mean, Ray Davis already had a good year. Ray Davis had a nice rookie year. Now, he wasn't amazing, but what did you expect as much from him? Ray Davis ran for 442 yards last year. He caught 189 yards in passes last year. The guy had over 600 yards of total offense. Pretty darn good. I don't need Ray Davis to have to step up. I think he's already there for me. If I get the exact same production from Ray Davis this year that I did from last year, I think that's fine. As long as I know Ty Johnson's still in the mix or, you know, they have another guy doing that as well. If you get, I'll say it this way, if you get the exact same numbers from your running backs in 2025 as you did from 2024, we're good here with that group, right? Bam. Then we sort out the James Cook stuff later. I don't know if you could really expect a step up from Cedric Van Pran Granger. That would really more so be on, these are draft picks, by the way, I'm going through. That would be more so for, you know, if something were to happen to Connor McGovern, right? Then yeah, but otherwise he's a backup. I do think the next two guys are super interesting for this. They drafted them. Eddie Ulofosio and Javon Solomon. And the reason I say Eddie, he is a backup, but because Matt Milano's going to the final year of his deal, because he has had some injuries, the fact that they didn't go out and draft a linebacker and they feel comfortable, I think that means they probably feel good that Eddie is coming along well. If he gets a chance ever here and there, I want to see a little more. Doesn't mean I need him to step up and be this big player this year, because if that happens, then something happened in front of him with either Milano or Dorian Williams. But Javon Solomon is a different case. I'd like to see Javon Solomon step up a little bit, and I think he can. If I do a Bills depth chart right now, Javon Solomon is my fourth defensive end on week one. Is that real? Is that right? I think he's fighting with Landon Jackson for that spot. As of right now, he's the fourth defensive end on week one. You want to say he's five? That's fine. I'm not going to give a third round rookie the automatic, you know, spot over him. This guy himself, last year, Javon Solomon was a fifth round pick, and now he's a year in your system. I love Landon Jackson. I think Landon Jackson could be a really good player for the Bills, even this year. I'm not about to put him ahead of Javon Solomon right now, who I actually thought showed some flashes last year when he played. And I think that you got to have someone step up there. You got to have that fourth defensive end step up. So I think he's on my list of guys that I need. I need more second year. I need him to kind of show more, make me feel better about, yeah, this position is good. And hey, look, I mean, the more he shows, the more you feel better about where that floor could be. Because if he doesn't, then you are counting on a guy like Landon Jackson. This is before Michael Hoyt comes back from suspension, by the way. Then you try to figure it out. The others from last year's draft class, Tylon Grable, who actually did wind up winning the swing tackle job. But hopefully he doesn't have to play, because that means someone got hurt. And then Daquan Hardy actually as well. He was a guy that almost won the return man position. But you know who did? Because they traded for him? Brandon Codrington. And as my producer and friend and colleague Josh Schmidt rightfully pointed out, when I said to you during the break, Josh. I said, give me a guy who is in his second year in the Bills but wasn't a part of the draft class. You said Brandon Codrington, and you're right about that. The Bills traded for him. He's a rookie last year, and I think that's a good one, but he was good last year. I don't think he needs to step up, but that's a good call by Josh to remind me of that. He was a rookie last year. He was, well, he finished, what, fifth or sixth in the league in punt return average? Totally. It's great. Like, I don't need him to be that much better. He was fine. I do wonder about Joe Andreessen for this. Joe Andreessen was a rookie last year. I think he's going to. This is more of the, on Joe Andreessen, for me, it's more of the I expect than I need. I don't need him to be a lot better. He showed me that he can play in this league. He played special teams. Did a good job. But I expect him to beat out Bale Inspector for the backup middle linebacker role. Big part of that is because Spector can't stay healthy. But I think Joe, for what he was able to show last year, for the fact that he was available, I think Joe Andreessen winds up being the backup middle linebacker this year over Bill Inspector. And we'll see how that plays out. That's your, you know, second year players. If you want to go a little bit deeper, is there anybody on here? I'm just going to look. Tyrell Shavers actually been here a couple years, so he can't really count. Hold on here. Let me go. I don't think you're going to talk about Frank Gore Jr. It'd be great if he could kind of show more again in, you know, training camp like he did last year, that you feel a little bit, you know, better about that. I'm looking at some of the other players that Tecori Couch is on the roster. He's a rookie last year. That's about it. So that's it, really. I think those are the guys you're looking at. The draft class from last year, plus pretty much Joe Andreessen and Brandon Codrington. Is there a player? What player? What second-year player needs to make that jump for you? 803-0550. I think Keon Coleman is the obvious answer here. Not just from us, from the organization. They've told us this. When you go back to the postseason press conference, that's when it started. You go to the combine. You go to the owners' meetings. It's been a theme throughout. From both Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott in different ways at different times, saying they need more from Keon Coleman. McDermott said he was starting to be dominant when he was healthy and playing as the arc was going up during the middle of the season. Then the injury happens. He comes back. He's not quite the same player, as Brandon Bean basically said. And wasn't quite as physical. Wasn't quite the same player. And I just think that that comes from, and I think what happened here for a lot of people, with Keon especially, and Dalton Kincaid, for Keon and Dalton Kincaid, this goes back to the conversation with Brandon Bean on the morning show on Monday. I think what's happened here is because Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott have talked the way they have talked about Keon Coleman and Dalton Kincaid, there are some fans and some media who are interpreting that as they don't have faith that those guys can take a jump. I don't take it that way. That's not how I interpret it. I've been covering this team long enough and been around these gentlemen long enough to know, and I've got a pretty good handle, I think, of when they talk like this, of what they're saying. And what they're saying is, we do have faith, but they got to show it. Like, this is not, it's not a faith thing. It's, oh, no. We have faith in how we do our program and the people we brought in, the person they are, that they're going to take that step. But we got to see it. They got to do it. And it's kind of a message to them anyway, through the media, whatever, right? And to them. They're not going to tell us something they're not telling them personally. But I never thought anything. Anytime we talk about wide receiver, pass catcher, what, if you want to debate, like, if the Bills have enough, that's fine. That's how that whole thing started. But nowhere in that debate was anything for me ever about how the Bills feel about Keon Coleman. And I have said that consistently, and I maintain that. I have said over and over and over again for months, they're not bringing in someone who's going to play over Keon Coleman. He is their number two receiver going into next year. He's playing. The messaging you heard from Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott was not that they're out on Keon Coleman. They don't have faith in Keon Coleman. That's not what they said. What they said was, we need that player to be the player we drafted and continue on after what we saw at the end of the last year when we didn't quite see it after the injury. That's all they said. And yeah, they did it pretty aggressively. But that's what they meant. I never thought they would be drafting over or bringing in free agents over Keon Coleman. You want to argue that Josh Palmer could be that guy? I guess. He could be on the field a little more in different circumstances. I'm doing a depth chart. It's Khalil Shakir. It's Keon Coleman. He's your ex-receiver. He's your starting outside receiver. That was never a lack of faith. Or in Dalton Kincaid, by the way. And Dalton was a little less, more about the injuries and playing through them than Dalton. So I never thought that about what they said. But he certainly has to be consistently better for 17 games than what we saw last year. And that's been said by the organization. All right, we're going to take a timeout right now. Chad Bishop, Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He's going to talk to us about Bills drafted tight end Jackson Hawes after this timeout on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Just looking back at that draft class from last year for the Bills. And I said last year going to the draft much of the same of what people said this year, which is, well, 10 guys aren't making this team. It's too good. You're not having that. And it didn't happen, but 8 guys did make the team last year. And that was even more than I thought would actually make it. The only two who didn't were Daquan Hardy and Travis Clayton. And, you know, Clayton was really more of an international guy, but he still spent time in the practice squad. And then Daquan Hardy spent all year on the practice squad. So they were in the organization still. But 8 different draft picks made the team last year. Out of the 9 this year, I still don't know if you can get 9 on the roster. It's going to be tough, right? This is a good roster. We'll see where it goes. One guy, though, the Bills did draft, who I think is going to make this team. He's going to play a role as a blocking tight end, is Jackson Hawes from Georgia Tech. And joining me right now on the Wester Hotline to talk more about the Bills' new tight end, the draft pick Jackson Hawes, is Chad Bishop from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Chad, it's Sal here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for giving me a call.
You got it. All right, so what can you tell us about the game of Jackson Hawes, a player that we hear is the best blocking tight end in this year's class?
Yeah, really a really unique football player, right? I mean, you think of a tight end as a guy who can block but also can catch the ball and maybe a little bit athletic, especially at the NFL level. But Jackson Hawes is just such a unique specimen, a guy who really ran a triple option offense in high school. He told us, was kind of a thin, undersized wide receiver, tall, obviously, but didn't have the weight yet. And they asked him to block on the perimeter in high school and ends up going to Yale to play football. So, of course, was kind of an unknown guy there, didn't catch the ball a whole lot at Yale. And then comes to Georgia Tech for one season. And Georgia Tech and their offense, I mean, they're a run-heavy offense. They love to run the ball with a lot of different looks and formations and shifts and use a lot of tight ends. They sort of radared and zeroed in on Jackson Hawes in the transfer portal and thought he'd be an outstanding fit for their offense, and boy, was he. I mean, just a guy who puts his head down, loves blocking. He'll tell you time and time again it's his favorite thing to do. He loves the violence of it, loves shoving guys around, and that's his role, and that's who he is, and he's very comfortable in that role and very confident in that role, and I think that's why NFL teams liked him a lot, because they saw a guy who can get out there and just move people around on the defensive front.
So the Bills run a lot of extra O-lineman sets, 6 offensive linemen. That's been traditionally, this year was Alec Anderson, an actual offensive lineman. What we surmise here in Buffalo is, okay, you can do this now, but now you have an actual tight end who can run as an extra offensive lineman, but this guy's going to have an eligible number, and he can actually go out and catch a pass. When he was asked to do that, was he effective enough to actually catch the ball?
I think so. I think he's a little bit underrated as a pass catcher, and I think part of that is because Georgia Tech didn't use him too much in that receiving game. Mm-hmm. But when his number was called, there wasn't, drops everywhere. He wasn't, not running crisp routes. I mean, the guy's going to be able to catch some footballs. Again, it's not going to be asked what he's going to be. It's not going to be what he's primarily due to ask. But he made a lot of catches in his career at Yale. And when he came to Georgia Tech, again, it wasn't his primary role. But he was certainly an option in that passing game. So I think, if you look at an NFL organization, they probably look at Jackson Hawes and say, all right, this guy's the best blocking tight end in the class. Let's draft him and develop him as a pass catcher. Why not, right? Like in 2-3 years from now, maybe he is a guy who can catch a whole bunch of balls and score a whole bunch of touchdowns. But right now, it's not what he's going to be asked to do. It's not necessarily necessary. But I just think he's a little bit underrated in that regard, because every time I saw him go out there in the passing game, he brought the ball in.
And he's going to be behind a couple of guys where he won't be asked to do that a lot here in Buffalo. And oh, by the way, can I say the Bills might have the best tight end name room in the league. They have Dalton Kincaid, Dawson Knox, and Jackson Hawes. Not to mention Zach Davidson. They have the best name. I saw somebody on Twitter the other day. It was really funny, Chad. They said the Bills only draft tight ends that that sound like they should be the lead in a Western with their name, right? It actually pretty much fits for these guys. All right, so I would say it goes without saying that this is a guy that would probably really embrace playing special teams as well, right?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt, especially if you're talking about a field goal coverage or a punt coverage. Being on there to protect the kickers and really hold his own on that line of scrimmage, there's no doubt. And again, it's a guy, when you talk about his background and his backstory, you know, going to Yale in the Ivy League and then playing 1 year at Georgia Tech, obviously he knows that he's not going to be the superstar and he's going to be asked to do the dirty work. Just that epitome, right, of like the role player, anything to help the team sort of personality, like let me out there, let me shove someone around. I don't care if it's, you know, third and 25 or it's a punt situation from the goal line. Just put me out there. I'm ready to block, ready to help, whatever I can do. And I'm sure, like you said, that'll probably be his role early on when summer camp and fall camp rolls around for the Bills.
Chad Bishop joining us here from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Let's talk about that personality. I loved the Zoom call with him. He has a really outgoing personality, but holy cow, man, an economics degree from Yale? I mean, this is a pretty smart kid, I guess, isn't it?
No doubt, right? And not only do you have to be smart to go to Yale, but you have to be smart to get into a graduate program at Georgia Tech, too. And that's really what Georgia Tech looks for in their tight ends, is guys can not only can perform athletically, but guys who understand the offense and understand where to be in that offense, not only as maybe a blocking tight end as the extension of the offensive line, but also as a receiver who can go out there and catch. Georgia Tech asks a ton of their tight ends. Coach Nathan Brock is a really good recruiter, a really good evaluator of talent, and they're looking for something specifically in their tight end room. And then you add in that personality piece, right? That guy who wasn't necessarily a leader on the football team, but I think a guy that a lot of players looked up to because, look, they asked Jackson Hollis to do a role, and look at what he did, and I think that stood out to a lot of the teammates. And just a really affable guy, but also very honest and very confident. I remember in Pro Day, we asked him, you know, why, you know, he'd be a great pick for an NFL franchise. And he, you know, came right out and said, like, I'm one of the best blocking tight ends there is. So why not draft me? I mean, he's very, very confident. Yeah. Again, very affable, loves to smile, loves to have a good time, but also loves to get down to business and loves to work.
I want to ask you about the ACC a little bit. And by the way, if you have a thought on Dorian Strong, we'll take it. But I don't know if they played each other, Virginia Tech. The Bills did draft back-to-back guys from the ACC, and Dorian Strong played 5 years for Virginia Tech. I'm not sure if that crossed your radar at all.
No, I don't quite remember. Georgia Tech did play Virginia Tech last year, but I don't remember Dorian standing out in that game. Not that he might have. I just don't recall.
No problem at all. I do want to ask you just overall about the ACC, because here we are. I went to Syracuse. We got a lot of fans here that follow that program and other ACC programs around the country. And I saw the other day the story that the ACC is thinking about reducing the number of basketball conference games. What do you? I don't love it. I don't know what I understand. For a chance to make the NCAA tournament, it doesn't make sense to me, Chad, to be quite honest. I don't really get what the end game here is if they're going to do that. Does that make sense to you?
You know, it seems like, you know, the last few years the league is sort of racking their brain on how to get more teams in the NCAA tournament. To your point, I don't know if this is the answer, right? Like, I think maybe the thinking is, okay, reduce the number of conference games and then ask your programs to schedule some high major quality, quote unquote, quad one opponents. But are all schools going to do that? I mean, some schools are going to look for wins and play the mid-majors and not necessarily increase their RPI or their net ranking. And when you have a league with a tradition and history like the ACC does, you would think that you would want your teams playing each other. But at the point where they're at right now, only getting three or four teams in an NCAA tournament, it seems like they're just kind of opening the Pandora's box of, like, what can we do to increase our profile, get more teams in the NCAA tournament. An interesting move. Who knows if that'll come to fruition or not, but I'm with you. I think the more conference games is probably better for that league.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is get better, right? The ACC, as you know, they've been so good for so long, and yes, Duke was Duke this year, but other than that, man, it was really, really disappointing, Chad.
It was. I mean, you look up and down the board. Of course, Louisville had sort of a season of all seasons for them, and North Carolina's entrance to the tournament was pretty debatable whether they deserved to be in or not. Mm-hmm. Duke was a class above itself. I mean, I saw them a few times and was so impressed by what they were. But, yeah, I mean, you know, what Virginia is right now all of a sudden, right? Like, think of them being national champions a few years ago, and now look at them, and Miami is – I mean, shoot, they were one of the worst teams in the entire country this last year. So, yeah, I mean, that's the simple answer. Get these teams better. Have these schools invest more money in their programs. The league needs to do what they can do to provide more finances to these programs to get better players to increase their profile because, lo and behold, the mighty SEC is now the best basketball conference in the country, and the ACC is looking up like, hey, what happened? This used to be us. NC State's fall off, right? Like, these teams got to get better and got to figure out a way to do it very quickly.
Yeah, well, I am happy what Fran Brown's done at Syracuse, maybe putting the football program a bit more on the map than what they had been before that. You know what I mean?
Oh, no doubt. And, you know, down here in Atlanta, it's pretty juicy given what happened, you know, last year with Brent Key not really saying a whole lot about Fran Brown, and Fran Brown taking those words and sort of motivating his team to win that game. And now Syracuse gets to come down here, and I think it's turned into a rivalry out of nowhere. Which is pretty fun. Why not, right? So, Fran and his folks have done a great job of building that roster and making Syracuse football fun again.
Yeah, we'll take it for sure. Real quick before I let you go, the only other Georgia Tech player drafted I see is Zeke Biggers. He did go to the Bills' rival, AFC East rival, the Miami Dolphins, a seventh-round pick, but what can you say about Zeke Biggers? Does he have a chance to make that roster?
Well, yeah, great young man, Zeke Biggers, kid from North Carolina, really clogs the middle in the run game, has to work on his pass rush. He knows that. That was his big knock in the draft process, that he doesn't get to the quarterback too often. But a kid who blocked 4 kicks in his college career. He's very athletic, very tall, can get up over that line, can move very well. His size has never been an issue. It's been more about technique and getting to the quarterback and sort of developing his game in the game of football. But again, another really outstanding talent and a kid that graduated from Georgia Tech, and we're happy to see him get his shot at the next level.
Chad, thank you so much. I really appreciate you joining us here today in Buffalo on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and good to talk ACC with you as well. Maybe we'll do it again sometime down the road, football or basketball.
Heck yeah, call anytime. Appreciate it.
All right, you got it. That is Chad Bishop, Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Good stuff there. On the Bills' new tight end, Jackson Hawes. What did we play Jackson yesterday? Who did we play for the Zoom call yesterday? Was that Jackson? It was Landon Jackson. See, isn't that funny? I thought about that. The Bills do have they drafted a guy with the first name Jackson and a guy with the last name Jackson. There are a few. Now, Jackson is becoming a first name. Like a lot of people, Jackson Holiday, right? In baseball is a big prospect. There's another Jackson in baseball who's a big prospect too. But it's becoming more of a first name. And of course, it's always been a last name you'd hear a lot of people have. So the Bills drafted Jackson Hawes and they drafted Landon Jackson. We can hear from Jackson Hawes a little bit later. So that Zoom call was really interesting. We can do that. Before we do that, though, at 11 o'clock today, we're going to go back to ACC country. We're going to hear from Andy Bitter, who covers Virginia Tech. We'll get his thoughts. I'll ask him a couple of the same questions I just asked Chad Bishop about the ACC overall, and maybe he has a thought on everything. But Dorian Strong comes in and plays for the Bills as a draft pick this year, and he's a very interesting prospect. It's really funny. The Bills took a guy in Max Hairston early who has incredible ball skills and can really play man-to-man with his speed. Dorian Strong is not really a man-to-man, is not really, I shouldn't say, he likes playing man-to-man a lot, but he's a guy that I think could really fit in the Bills' zone system as well. He said he likes to be a press man guy. So it's interesting that they get him, Max Hairston, early. They get Dorian Strong later, and we've heard a lot about the Bills talking about, or thinking about, I should say, people think, the Bills haven't said this, people think the Bills could be going a little bit more towards that, man-to-man, and I think they got a couple guys who fit that mold a little bit. So we'll talk about Dorian Strong with Andy Bitter coming up here in just a little while on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. In the meantime, we'll take a timeout. 803-0550, if you want to chime in, what second-year Bills player needs to step up for you here in 2025? I'll be back after this here on WGR. So Elliot Friedman from, you know, hockey writer all over the place, you know him. He, Sportsnet, I think is the biggest spot, but his podcast on his 32 thoughts. Apparently, according to Aaron on Twitter, thank you, Aaron, your tweet came across my feed, so I'm going to trust that you're right, Aaron, okay? At 23 Sabres. Thank you, Aaron. At 23 Sabres. I saw this from a Sabres fan. Says, Friedman says, Kevin Adams and Terry Pegula met on Sunday. He doesn't know how big or small, but he does expect changes. I think we'd all expect that, right? So thank you very much, Aaron, for bringing that to us, because I would say, I love Elliot Friedman. This is not a shot at Elliot Friedman at all, but I don't know if we learned anything new here, right? Which is, there's always changes, big or small. Very rarely is there not. I mean, the Bills had changes this year. They had three coaches basically leave and three come in, I think it is. There might be one assistant coach changed out. Well, that would be a change. So if Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts says he expects changes, but he doesn't know how big or small, it could be anything. And I don't think any of us would expect anything different there. The question is how big of a change it's going to be. Because it feels like that could happen. But then again, at the end of the season, I know there were reports that Kevin Adams, you know, could have his title changed, might not be GM. I understand all that. But at the end of the season, when Adams and Ruff talked to the media, it was clear, A, that Lindy Ruff is coming back. I mean, that's been talked about. Now, unless something totally drastically changes, which is totally possible, anything can happen, and he could be moved into a different role. I would not expect, if anything were to happen with Lindy Ruff, I would not expect him to just be not in the organization, right? I think Terry Pegula has such an affinity for Lindy Ruff, and he means so much to the organization and throughout their history and their franchise, that if anything were to actually happen with the head coach, I think this particular head coach would still be on in some capacity. But I don't think anything's happening with the head coach based on what we've heard and what we've seen. Adams could be different. And maybe he gets reassigned. Maybe he stays in the organization. Because I think that the same is true for Terry Pegula and his relationship and what he feels about Kevin Adams as a human being, as a person, and the job that he can do. And if that job isn't as general manager, it might be as a something different. That would be a major change. If you have the head, if you have the head coach or the GM that's changed, that's a major change. If you have a couple of assistants that are changed out, I'd say that's a pretty small change, but it happens every year. I mean, I say small change, of course, it impacts these people's and their lives and their careers. I understand all that. But that's not a big change that a lot of you want or maybe are expecting, but we'll see. So thank you very much, Aaron. I appreciate the tweet I just saw come across about Elliot Friedman's 32 thoughts. And apparently he says Adams and Pegula did meet on Sunday. He doesn't know how big or small, but he does expect changes. All right, so June 28th is the ride for Roswell. And we have a lot going on here that you can be a part of. Join us in the fight against cancer. You can ride with Bulldog and WGR's Ride for Roswell team. Once you join our team, you're going to receive an email to pick up your t-shirt and water bottle at Tom's Pro Bikes on Walden Avenue in Lancaster. If you're not a rider, you can still support the cause by donating to our team and helping us reach our goal of $10,000 before the ride. Visit WGR550.com for more details. Andy Bitter coming up. He writes for Tech Sideline. We just heard about Georgia Tech, Jackson Hawes. Now it's time for Virginia Tech and Dorian Strong after this timeout on WGR.